Every month we get to meet people whose individual stories are intertwined with the story of the region. Stories of Southern Oregon are compiled by Maureen Flanagan Battistella for the Southern Oregon Digital Archive, SODA, at the Hannon Library at, you guessed it, Southern Oregon University. This month, Maureen is back with a couple of the leaders of Medford's Dunbar Farms. If you've ever seen the collections of old pear box labels from the Rogue Valley, you've probably noticed the pear on skis. That's the box from Dunbar Farms back in its pear-growing heyday. Things have changed just a bit as the farm has diversified. Two guests join us along with Maureen Flanagan Battistella. Emily Mostue is Dunbar and Jane Carpenter's daughter, and a pleasure to see you in the studio.
Good to see you.
Nick Stevenson is with us as well. I said your title is Director of Marketing and Business Development. He said, just call me Farm Boy. So welcome to you, Nick.
Thank you.
So this was once all about pears. I mean, did the family get into the fruit business a lot ahead of a lot of other growers, Emily?
No, there were a lot of growers about that time. My great uncles came out in 1909, Leonard and Alfred Carpenter, and started the farm and planted pears. We have some wonderful, wonderful photos of them from 1909 and 1910 being with drags being pulled by draft horses to try to even out all the land in order to be able to plant the very small little seedlings.
I wanted to use that picture. It wasn't formatted quite the way that our website needs, but it's a wonderful picture of the horses at work, a photograph from 1909 of the original work going on. So 110 years. Has it been in the family the whole time since?
The whole time. So Leonard and Alfred were the first generation, and then my father took it over, Dunbar Carpenter took it over in just after World War II. And he farmed for like 55 years. And then I started working on the farm, and my son came to join me. And now my daughter's come to join me with her husband, Nick, who is joining us here today. So it's a four-generation farm.
Century farm.
Century farm.
That's what
as
I was
well.
Going to ask. Whether you're technically a century farm, do you have
yes,
a certification?
Yes, we got the designation of a century farm.
In 2009.
Exactly. And we should point out the location is unique. You're pretty much surrounded by the city of Medford now, aren't you?
We are actually inside the city
are
of
you?
Medford limits.
Okay.
Yeah. We have our address is on Hillcrest Road in East Medford, and the boundary on the east side is Foothill Road. So that's the boundary of the city limits at this point. So
right. There's a certain level of intertwining of my history with Dunbar Farms, at least
yes.
with Dunbar Carpenter, because Dunbar Carpenter was one of the founding owners of KDRV-TV, which brought me to Southern Oregon in 1985. So I have fond memories of Dunbar myself, but I always wondered how it was that his name ended up being the name on the farm that was started by a previous generation.
Well, it's gone through a series of different names. So the first name was Veritas, which was what Leonard and Alfred named it. And then it followed when Dunbar took it over. He kept the name Veritas for the home place, but he added on a number of different orchards, both on the east side of the valley and the west side of the valley. So he was trying to keep, he called it Dunbar Orchards because it was a series of different orchards under that name. But Veritas was still the name for the home place.
Okay. So when the uncles began the farm, I understand there was no irrigation in those days?
That is correct. No irrigation at all. And we have pictures of them with a water container being pulled by horses, and they hand-watered every little seedling. Must have been a real onerous job.
So Nick Stevenson,
Leonard on the irrigation board?
Yes, he was, as I recall, I think he was president in 1921 of the Medford Irrigation District.
And that's when water came to
and
town.
And that's when they put the Four Mile Lake, which is the head of the irrigation for the Medford Irrigation, head of the water for the Medford Irrigation District.
Really important.
That's when they put the ditch in all the way down.
Really important.
Yeah.
So Maureen's
important.
Interview with Emily Mostue and David Mostue Nesbitt, Emily's son and one of the farm managers, is up on YouTube as of this week as well, of which I've obviously cribbed some of my questions for this interview. But it seems like in the early days, the idea was just to use the water before irrigation, just to get the seedlings up and healthy. And
yes.
then it would be dry land farming
exactly.
after that?
Exactly. Yep. Mm-hmm. So the production level was not very high.
That was the next question, is whether you get a much bigger pear with water in it. Sounds
yes,
like you
yes,
do.
Yes, you do. Mm-hmm. And when we look at photographs from the early years and you look at the hillsides and the valleys, they are totally dry. And if you look at them now, I mean, when we have access to so much water, the growth, the green growth is phenomenal. So the shapes of all the hills change because of all that water.
And I should remark that Emily and her family has been good enough to loan us the photographs of her family farm, and those are in the Southern Oregon Digital Archive, soda.sou.edu, and they're just a beautiful series of representational images from the turn of the century. So thank you.
I will be happy to put some of those up on our website. I must admit, though, that once I saw the sign of the skiing pair once again, I kind of made the decision for what our photo would be
for that one.
for jeffexchange.org. This is Stories of Southern Oregon once again on the Jefferson Exchange. Maureen Flanagan Battistella back with us, along with Emily Mostrew, who is the daughter of the Dunbar of Dunbar Farms in East Medford. Nick Stevenson, her son-in-law, who is the, well, farm boy or director of marketing and business development at the farm. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange. Questions, comments, we have headphones, we can listen to you. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So, Nick, when you look back at the 110 years of existence of the farm you're working on now, do you not think in terms of good old days? It sounds like things are a bit easier to do now.
Well, it doesn't feel very easy with any of the things we're doing now. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it's a remarkable history. It's neat to have become part of it, and we like to honor the history of the farm with all the new things that we're doing as well. For example, we just recently created an art installation on the walls of the tasting room, and it's a farm stand tasting room there on the property. And in this installation, we actually highlight three eras of farming, starting with Alfred and Leonard, and then moving on to Dunbar, and then we have some photos and some information about the third era, which is what we feel like we're in currently.
So a tasting room implies you got wine, and you do.
We do, yep.
And then the label has some significance with the property, too. Tell us about that.
Right, yeah. So the wine brand and label is called Rocky Knoll, and it features one of the prominent knolls on the property that we call the Rocky Knoll, which is also where our vineyards are located. And we're really excited about our wine. We actually entered our claret into the Oregon Wine Experience competition this year, and we won a gold medal, which we're really excited about. So we're pouring that in the tasting room on Fridays, where our farm stand is open every day, but we have staff, and the tasting room part of it is open Fridays, and we always try to have some kind of food, whether it be a food truck or something like that, as well as entertainment, live music, or educational things, or time to meet with our farm animals and things like that.
Now, how long have you been working at Dunbar Farms?
Exactly 1 year.
Really?
Actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you are. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
But I think it's a really good example of why this particular farm has thrived over the century. I think that Emily's family has continued to diversify and be flexible in looking at economic challenges and shifts. And mm-hmm. Nick's role in the last year has been another example of how you've kind of changed direction again in order to take advantage of market opportunities.
Yeah, I like to think of it as we're farming more than just produce and grains and things. Now we're farming experience
and heritage.
And heritage, yeah. Well, we want to create a place where the public can come onto the farm and have positive experiences, enjoy wonderful wine and farm fresh food, interact with our animals, and have a great experience.
Yeah.
Was this ever a life you considered for yourself? I mean, when you first went to college, did you think, I'm going to go back and work at my wife's farm?
Absolutely not. Though, after college, I spent 8 years in a desk job, and that was enough motivation to want something new. And
yeah.
That's kind of a neat thing about my role. Now, Allie and I live on the farm. We're very involved with the planning for its future and all the various operations, whether it be rebuilding a tractor or doing social media marketing. It's a wide range of activities, and it really keeps you engaged, and it feels really meaningful.
There's always something to do, it sounds like. And so,
yes.
This is not an 8-hour a day desk job either, is it?
Nope. Things can happen at all hours, and you just kind of learn to adapt.
Emily Mostu, how different an operation is this? I mean, in addition to the wine, it sounds like, and you know, again, I picked this up from Maureen's interview with you and David, that the farm as an orchard lost money for years. And so decisions had to be made about its future at some point. And so how long ago did diversification begin?
Well, as we were driving over, Nick and I, and we were talking about the three different phases that have gone into this farm, and we are talking about the current phase of those of us in the third and fourth generation, it's really reaching out to the community. It's making the farm a place where the community can come and be part of. And that's its economic future, I think. It's keeping the farm operating. But you never make money, at least in the size farm that we have, you never make money just as a farm, a production farm.
But your parents did for years. I mean, the Carpenter Foundation, I would assume, was made possible by some of the proceeds from the farm. I mean, the Carpenter Foundation has been doling out millions of dollars for decades now.
But the Carpenter Foundation funds came from Alfred and his wife, Helen. So that's where those funds came from. They're totally and 100% separate from the farm operation. So
okay, so the farm has never, on this scale you're saying, never quite made it.
No, it's not what you might call a lucrative business to get into.
Right. And yet you've held on to it. I mean, you've decided to continue with it.
Well, it's because we love it. We love the farm. We love being there. We love sharing it with the community. And the community at this point, I mean, we've been floored by the response of people that come out and come on our Friday nights between 4:30 and 8.
I love that you have people to help with parking. Thank you.
Well, we have some thoughts about parking, but we're working on it. But people just come in and they say, wow, we never knew that this was here. And thank you so much for sharing your farm. And that just makes all of us feel like it's all worthwhile.
So how long has it been a public kind of thing where you invited the people to come onto the farm?
We started about 10 years ago, but still only being open on Fridays, except for our Honor Barn. And anybody can come to the Honor Barn anytime and pick up any of the fruit or vegetables that we have there.
But you've also had school programs.
We've had school programs for
Farm to School.
Rogue Valley Farm to School program. Ran programs there. Kids Unlimited had a lot of programs out at the farm.
Yeah.
So we've done that for, but that's still been within the 10 years, I think.
Yeah.
So probably about 10 years. So, and it's sort of growing bit by bit. I think Nick and Allie have taken it in a new direction and add a lot more activities.
Yeah. Do you find a lot of people excited, Nick, about getting to know farms? I mean, with programs like Rogue Valley Farm to School, it seems like there's a greater effort to let kids know where food comes from, which sort of dovetails into the whole local food movement, which certainly can help you for your farm operation.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that there's lots of people and families in the community and visitors that are really excited to have, to come onto the farm, have that experience.
You've got these picnic nights now.
I was just going to talk about that.
That's so cool.
One of the things we've been offering, we call Picnic by the Ponds, by the pond, where we open up the area down by one of the ponds on the farm, and it has a nice grassy area there under some oak trees, and it's very family friendly. We have our cows and horses and llamas nearby, and it's really a neat scene when there's a bunch of families down there with the kids running all over the place and interacting with the animals and their parents enjoying lively conversations and the view and all of that's, it's nice. It can be really magical.
So it sounds like there's all sorts of new areas in addition to, you know, making sure that you know how to grow wine grapes as opposed to knowing how to grow pears, knowing how to grow alfalfa. Now you have to learn about things like liability insurance and Americans with Disabilities Act compliance and stuff like that. So all kinds of new wrinkles that come with becoming a public operation.
Absolutely.
In addition to the wine grapes, and we have 5 acres of wine grapes, we also grow 80 acres of hay, and we grow about 20 acres of grain. So we have our own stone ground mill that we use to grind up the grain into flour, and a lot of it's sold to Rise Up, which is a local bakery out in the Applegate.
Wonderful bread.
And they make wonderful bread. And we,
the rustic Levain is my favorite.
I agree with you. It's my favorite, too. But we then buy bread back from Rise Up and sell it on our Friday. On our Friday evening.
Right, so back home on the original farm, right?
Exactly.
This is Stories of Southern Oregon on the Jefferson Exchange. We have Maureen Flanagan Battistella back with us, and her latest snares are the folks from Dunbar Farm. Emily Mostu, who is the daughter of Dunbar and Jane Carpenter, who ran it as Dunbar Farms. Nick Stevenson is her son-in-law and the director of marketing and business development, or as he calls himself, Farm Boy. Questions, comments from you? Welcome on the Jefferson Exchange, 800-838-3760 on the phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Emily, when I asked Nick about, you know, whether he considered working on a farm, how much, if any, did you guide your kids or their kids' kids to come back to the farm? I mean, was there ever any pressure to say, you know, I expect you guys to come back here and run this place when I'm done with it?
No, in fact, I think we tried to send them in the opposite direction. So maybe that's why they came back. I'm not quite sure, but it's wonderful to have both my son David and his wife Kat and their daughter Ani and then Allie and Nick on the farm. It makes it a real family affair, so to speak.
But you still handle the hay, right?
I sell all the hay.
Yeah, my favorite picture of you is against like a three-story a stack of hay bales and you kind of running with a clipboard.
Yep, I sell and load all the hay, but bale at a time.
Oh. Emily does a lot of incredible amount of work around the farm, and even today she prepped some wholesale herbs that we brought for some of the restaurants here in Ashland so that we can take care of that while we're here.
Oh, so you came to town with some of the wares from the farm?
Yep, yeah. Sitting in the back of my car.
Check off some boxes while we're here.
So what about for you, Emily? Was there any pressure from Dunbar and Jane for you and your siblings to hang out at the farm?
Exactly the same situation. I think they thought we'd never come back. I mean, I left her about 15 years to go to school and then lived in Portland for 5 or 6 years after that. And then my husband and I decided we wanted to come back to a smaller town and came back to the farm. Sort of eased our way into participating.
I have to believe that land is zoned exclusive farm use. Is that right?
It's sort of an oddity because we're inside the city. Mm-hmm. So anything that's in the county gets designated that way. The city has a different kind of designation, City of Medford. So we have an exclusive agricultural overlay that is on the city-type zoning.
The reason I ask is because of future considerations. I mean, you're in the City of Medford now, and you know, there are always pressures for urban places to become urban. Dunbar Farms was far from the center of Medford when it was first established 110 years ago, and now the City of Medford has creeped up not only to it, but around it as well.
You are exactly right. You are exactly right. There's always pressures, and the city has an internal density requirement, and places like us sort of, we go counter to that density.
Oh, sure.
But I think we offer something that's really special for Medford and for the citizens of Medford, so I think we're going to try to keep it a farm as long as we can.
Yeah.
So do you sit down and talk sometimes about the potential future of the place? And, you know, if it becomes more lucrative as a place to sell off as what could become a series of streets and subdivisions versus Dunbar Farms, I mean, this is something financially you'd probably need to consider.
I mean, it's always a topic of discussion, but family members have different opinions on what should happen. And Dunbar Farm belongs to my sister and my brother as well as myself. So anyway.
So there's a trust or corporation. I think that's a good question.
It's a corporation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's an LLC.
So we're doing everything we can to try to preserve it as farmland. And we're very focused on business planning for the future. It's something that's very important to everybody at the farm, but a particular focus of Allie and myself when we coming here is we want the farm to be sustainable, and for it to be sustainable, it needs to be an economically viable operation.
Yeah. Now, you're not certified organic, though, is that right?
Correct. Mm-hmm. We grow most everything organically. We grow our hay and our grain organically. Our grapes are not totally organic, but pretty much it's just we use a synthetic spray to keep down powdery mildew once or twice a year. But that's pretty much it.
So it probably helps to stay in the farming business that you got neighbors who are still in the farming business. But are the folks at Hillcrest across the road, those are out of the city limits, aren't they?
Yes, but they're inside the urban growth boundary as of the last go-round. Mm-hmm. So my guess is they will come into the city at one point or another.
Does having farming neighbors help you stay in the farming business, I guess, is the question.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're basically an island sort of surrounded by the city of Medford because the city of Medford's up above Hillcrest as well.
Right.
You raise an important point, though, about the right to farm. And that can be kind of tricky, I think, within a populated area.
Yeah. When you get subdivisions around you, they raise questions about the things that you're doing that might interfere with their enjoyment of life.
Exactly.
So you're cultivating those neighbors, aren't you?
Well, we certainly try to talk to them and keep connected. When we were first planning the tasting room, we did have a neighborhood meeting and invited all the neighbors to come in so that they could raise their issues and we could try to explain to them what we were trying to do. So we try to work with our neighbors. We try to make sure music is not too loud and it's going to bother them. We try to make a plus for our neighbors.
So just a couple seconds left here. Nick Stevenson, any new wrinkles you're planning to unroll this fall or next year or something?
Well, yeah. So over this winter, we're hoping to do some improvements to the facilities and gear up for an even bigger year of events and fun activities for next year.
So. But farm to table. Dinner.
Oh, yes, our wine dinner.
Oh, right. Thank you. Yeah, so on the 22nd of this month, we're having a wine dinner. And here we're going to be featuring Chef Matthew Griffin, who's going to be preparing a 3-course meal that will go along with our award-winning wines.
I've got my tickets.
You have? Okay, great.
Maureen's ready to go. Maureen Flanagan Battistella is the curator and collector of stories of Southern Oregon. Thank you so much for bringing to us the folks from Dunbar Farms. Emily Mostue and Nick Stevenson, thank you for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange. Pleasure to have you here.
Thanks for having us.
Our pleasure.